Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, June 4th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the link in the upper left-hand corner of the newly revised website that says Start Here, it will take you to a place where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. That book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for 17 years or so to improve the quality of my life and relationships, manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been given. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have called in and been stepped through the process of using that worksheet or clarifying some of the aspects of how to do it better and or give a testimonial for how the active use of that tool has dramatically improve their life for the better. And then if you do that, and the other option is to go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that, it'll show you a glowing heart icon. Click on that icon and you'll be able to download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And if you do that, and you've got a question or a comment for us, you can give us a call, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question up by your phone number, calling out you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. And or you can assist us in living into our intention with this work, which is to be of service. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and this is the 155th day of the year. And lesson 155 reads, Step back and let him lead the way. The commentary is as follows. There is a way of living in the world that is not here, even though it seems to be. You do not change appearance, although you smile more frequently. Your forehead is serene, your eyes are quiet, and the ones who walk the world as you do recognize you as their own. And the quiet ones who walk the world as you do recognize their own. Yet those who have not yet perceived the way will recognize you also and believe that you are like them as you were before. Reminds me of the old adage, before enlightenment, you chop wood and carry water. And after enlightenment, you chop wood and carry water. The thing that changes when you're in that moment of enlightenment is your awareness, which enfolds and encompasses you and everything around you in a way that doesn't happen when you're not in that enlightened state. The world is an illusion. Those who choose to come to it are seeking for a place where they can be illusions and avoid their own reality. Yet when they find their own reality is even here, then they step back and let it lead the way. What other choice is really theirs to make? To let illusions walk ahead of truth is madness. But to let illusions sink behind the truth and let the truth stand forth as what it is merely sanity. This is the simple choice we make today. The mad illusion will remain a while in evidence for those to look upon who choose to come and have not yet rejoiced to find they were mistaken in their choice. They cannot learn directly from the truth because they have denied that it is so. And so they need a teacher who perceives their madness. But that teacher can still look beyond illusion to the simple truth in them. In truth, if truth demanded they give up the world, it would appear to them as if it asked the sacrifice of something that is real. Many have chosen to renounce the world while still believing its reality, and they have suffered a sense of deep loss, and they have not been released accordingly. Others have chosen nothing but the world, and they have suffered from a sense of loss that's still deeper, which they do not understand. Between these paths, there is another road that leads away from the loss of every kind, for sacrifice and deprivation both are quickly left behind. This is the way appointed for you now. You walk this path as others walk, nor do you seem to be distinct from them, although you are indeed. Thus can you serve them a while you serve yourself, and set their footsteps on the way that God has opened to you, and them through you. Illusion still appears to cling to you, that you may reach them. Yet, for you, the illusion has stepped back, and it is not illusion that they hear you speak of, nor illusion that you bring their eyes to look on and their minds to grasp. Nor can the truth which walks ahead of you speak to them through illusions. For the road leads past illusion now, while on the way you call to them that they may follow you. All roads will lead to this one end, for sacrifice and deprivation are paths that lead nowhere. Choices for defeat and aims that will remain impossible. All this steps back as truth comes forth in you to lead your brothers and sisters from the ways of death and to set them on the way to happiness. Their suffering is but illusion, yet they need a guide to lead them out of it, for they mistake illusion for the truth. Such is salvation's call and nothing more. It asks that you accept the truth and let it go before you, lighting up the path of ransom from illusion. Walk safely now, yet carefully, because this path is new to you, and you may find that you are tempted still to walk ahead of truth and let illusions be your guide. Your holy brothers have been given you to follow in your footsteps, and you walk with certainty of purpose to the truth. It goes before you now that they may see something with which they can identify, something they understand in a new way. We walk to God. Pause and reflect on this. Could any way be holier or more deserving of your effort or your love and your full intent? What way could give you more than everything or offer less and still content the Holy Son of God? Your feet are safely set upon the road that leads the world to God. Look not to ways that seem to lead you elsewhere. Dreams are not a worthy guide for you who are the Creator's offspring. Forget not what the creation has placed from his hand to yours and given you and your brothers and sisters in trust that you are worthy of this trust in you. Creation cannot be deceived. The trust of creation has made your pathway certain and your goal secure. You will not fail, either your brothers and sisters nor your true self. So, I will step back and let him lead the way, for I would walk along the road to the creation, to love, to God, to him. In the Course in Miracles experiment by Pam Grout, we're also reading that series of lessons. And lesson 155 by Pam Grout is titled, Rewriting the Laws That Run My Life. She quotes Mike Dooley at the beginning of this segment. It's the inner world that needs adjusting, tweaking, and plucking whenever the outer world fails to please. Pam writes, as a travel writer, I often end up confronting customs and laws different from my own. In Singapore, for example, it's illegal to hug in public. In Cannes, you can be arrested for wearing a Jerry Lewis mask. I've also heard of some pretty weird laws in my own country. In Devon, Texas, I'm told, it's illegal to make furniture in the nude. Darn that, Devon, Texas. We might get a chuckle out of these. And let me just add that I don't plan to pack my Jerry Lewis mask on my next trip to Cannes. But more than these laws, I'm also at the mercy of arbitrary laws I've imposed in my own head. Laws such as, quote, life is a struggle, end quote, and, quote, I have to do everything myself, end quote, or, quote, it's me against the world, close quotes. Lesson 155, I will step back and let Hobson lead the way, one of the many words she uses for God or the Creator or love. I will step back and let Hobson lead the way. This reminds me that the world is an illusion. When I consult my own personal Hobson, I'm led away from loss, sacrifice, and deprivation. I'm ushered away from all of the, quote, laws, close quotes, that I activate with my beliefs. Here's what creation, here's what love, here's what Hobson promises. The world is limitless, abundant, and strangely accommodating. Everything always works out for me. By following my heart, I lead a life of purpose and meaning and big-ass joy. The more love I give, the more love I receive. Actually, the more of anything I give, the more I receive. So 15 minutes twice a day, and then hourly, reminding myself I will step back and let the Creator lead the way, for I would walk along the road to him. So our call in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What is on your mind? How would it be supportive for us to spend this next 45 minutes? What is on your mind about the tools or anything you've heard on this show in the last 10 years? What is on your mind about your inner voice, your inner child? What is on your mind about what goes through your mind whenever you make a so-called mistake? You stub your toe, or you drop a glass, or you forget something that you need to have with you at work, and you're halfway to work before you remember it. What is that negative internal dialogue? How can we help you change that, reprogram that? One of the things that happened in the support group last night was we watched an hour and 15 or 20 minutes of a talk by Matt Kahn. And Matt Kahn has a, if you don't know of him, he has a very soft energy. And he's soft-spoken, he's got a soft energy, but he's got a sense of humor. His energy is, some might even call it effeminate. He is gentle, and often in his approach to things, redefines allowance, acceptance, surrender, and gentleness. In the talk last night, he said, so here I am, and I walk into this scene with my little pony energy, and here's this person who just gets off the phone, and they're irritated and aggravated and clearly not having a good day. The whole talk, the premise of the talk, was about this internal dialogue, about how most of us are anything but gentle and loving with ourselves. This is very much like the primary theme of the book, The Untethered Soul, with Michael Singer. In the first part of that book, he talks about how most of us have such a deeply negative self-inner dialogue that if we took a transcript of it and gave it to one of our best friends and asked them to follow us around and read it to us all day long, we'd kick them out of our lives before lunch. We wouldn't allow anybody to talk to us or treat us as negatively as we treat ourselves. And yet we get lividly angry if anybody else even comes close to being that negative or judgmental towards us. It is this kind of a split, is this kind of a psychosis, separation from the actuality that drives much of our mental and emotional pain. And Matt Kahn was suggesting that we don't just simply be nicer to ourselves, that we actually start monitoring our self-talk and turn it to be loving. But understand that if I turn toward my inner child and tell him I love him, he's sweet, he's adorable, I'll protect him at all costs, and he laughs in my face, it's probably because I've spent years calling myself an idiot and thinking stupid thoughts, of angry thoughts about myself. Every time I made a little mistake, every time I didn't succeed the way I wanted to, every time I tripped or fell or forgot something I was supposed to remember. And so after years, often decades, of ridicule and harsh words and thoughts, it's not too surprising that that inner child would not believe me when I say I love him and I respect him and I want to protect him. So how do we get from point A to point B? How do we get from the place where we've had years, if not decades, of internal verbal and emotional abuse to the place where when we say something loving, our inner child believes it and accepts it and is nourished by it? Well, Matt Kahn suggests that we think in terms of emotional deposits, like we would financial deposits into a savings account, and that when we say something loving, when we try to think loving thoughts about ourselves or our younger versions of ourselves, and our self recoils in disbelief or sarcasm or bitterness, Matt says that's because essentially that emotional account is sitting in a negative state. It's not even at zero balance. It's in a highly negative state. I've poured so many negative thoughts and judgments and insults through my internal dialogue into my younger self for so long that it doesn't seem right or honest or true when I all of a sudden start to be gentle and loving. And so he suggests that we acknowledge the difficult feeling, the upset, the disbelief coming from the inner child, and still keep saying the positive statements. And eventually we'll reach that neutral level, and then we'll start building a positive balance in the emotional account. And then as I'm having a positive balance, I've convinced my inner child that I respect him or her, and that I will do everything I can to protect him or her, and that I appreciate everything they've been through and all of their finer traits and their inherent nature as loving, loved, loving and lovable forever. Then it starts to feel good when I say something loving to my inner self. But until I've accumulated enough positive deposits to move from that negative state to the positive, it feels kind of awkward. It feels insincere. It feels sarcastic. So make a deposit. Use your conscious awareness to choose to be loving and respectful of yourself, even when the negative dialogue wants to raise its ugly head and ridicule you and label you as damaged or broken or stupid or crazy. And be gentle with yourself, and over time, that process is like making deposits into a savings account, and the balance accrues. And then it starts paying interest. And if we do that, our lives get better. We trust ourselves more. We have more situations arise that used to be triggers to upset that don't trigger us at all. And one of the most powerful things for me that Matt Kahn said in that talk last night was, if you're in this situation and you're trying to help your inner child learn that you love and respect him or her, and your inner child is recoiling with disgust and awkwardness and disbelief, honor that, pay attention to that, and then speak directly to your inner child, and instead of giving any kind of a lecture, ask him or her to teach you how to speak lovingly or respectfully in a way that would feel genuine or acceptable to your inner child. Instead of assuming that if you just keep repeating, oh, sweetie, I love you, and that eventually it's going to fill the need, ask your inner child what would feel genuine, what would feel nourishing and honoring to you. I need you to teach me how to be more loving. I have practiced being abusive, bitter, resentful, judgmental with you and everybody else in my life for decades. So I don't really have that much practice being loving, but I've learned that it can happen, and I want to learn how to do it better. And then follow your intuition. Follow whatever nudges or urges or flat-out knowings that come to you, and spend time being gentle, being loving, being respectful, being cherishing, being appreciative, being grateful with yourself. Overtly, literally, talk to yourself gently. Ask your inner child what he or she needs. Listen to what response you get as an intuitive hit or an actual comment in your head. And then, above all else, take action to demonstrate, because my actions always speak louder than my words. Take actions to demonstrate to your younger self, your inner child, whatever you want to call it, your true self, that you are committed to making the change, to building in that positive area, to acting in a way that demonstrates the truth of your commitment a powerful set of thoughts. It is an even more powerful practice to engage in. It's an age-old wisdom. The Michael Singer book, Untethered Soul, and then the way he expands his experience in the Surrender Experiment are highly recommended, those books. And or he's got an online course that we've done through the support group that talks about living from a place of surrender, I believe is the title. But when I ask my inner child, when I ask my true self, what do you need to feel better right now? That's a good step. But what's really needed for my personal growth and healing is for me to take action based on whatever arises. What would that look like? Well, it might look like sitting down and doing an hour or two of targeted journaling that Michael Rice calls a mind shifter. It might look like sitting down and committing to do 2 or 3 or 5 or 30 worksheets over the next month. It might look like, you know, turning off all the electronic devices and, you know, putting on some nice music and relaxing. And it might look like going for a walk or soaking in a tub with conscious awareness focused on this inner voice, this inner child. Remembering, consistently reminding myself, actions speak louder than words. I worked with a number of people recently who have a very, very negative inner dialogue, self-talk, sometimes very loud and negative. And they laugh when I suggest that they talk lovingly to themselves. And some of them are at the point where they've begun to recognize how many hours, day after day after day, they spend engaging, without even realizing it, engaging that inner dialogue and its negative self-judgment. And the more they pay attention to that, and the more they just acknowledge it without beating themselves up for it, the more it loosens its grip on them, on their emotions, on their feeling state. And some of them are quite shocked when I make the suggestion that if they've tapped into a younger version of self, like maybe they're using the reality management worksheet and in the goal cancellation process and asking to be shown the hidden part of their mind, they flash on to a time earlier in their life. They were in fifth grade. And I recommend they go and talk to that 10-year-old, 11-year-old person who's in fifth grade and had this very awkward or embarrassing or traumatic event happen, and ask that fifth grader part of themselves what he or she needs to feel better right now. And then if they say, I want some ice cream, go get ice cream. If they say, you know, I want a little, you know, gem to put on my bookshelf that I can, every time I look at it, I can, you know, be reminded that you're listening to me, that you aren't going to lock me away in this abusive memory anymore, then go buy that little gem. Or if you're not, you know, full of money, and go out and find a beautiful rock and wash it off and put it on the shelf and tell that younger version of yourself, this is your rock. This is commemorating the trauma that you survived and your heroic efforts to be loving in spite of that. And it's those kinds of actions that we take that demonstrate far more effectively than any lectures or words or writing that we do to that younger part of ourself, that we mean it, that we are turning over a new leaf, that we are changing the protocol, that we are going to be nurturing and supportive and respectful and civil with our internal dialogue. So, we have about 28 minutes left. How can we support you? What is this conversation stirring up in you? What are the thoughts or reactions you have to somebody who says, learn to talk more gently to yourself, and if it doesn't feel good right away, keep doing it. It's like putting deposits into a savings account. And when you finally get to the point where that savings account balance is in the plus, is in the positive, you will feel very, very differently every time you speak gently, lovingly to yourself. And if there's any question about how to do that, be brave and ask that younger version of yourself to teach you how to be more respectful or loving. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. What a great subject, interesting subject. You know, I think when we do the worksheets and clear things slowly and gradually and so forth, some of that self-acceptance comes in on the coattails of it. But to actually, like Michael often says, do a love exchange with yourself. Well, I think you suggested catch yourself by surprise in the mirror. That has been very good because the surprise, you get that image before you know who it is. Of course, you know who it is, but you get the surprise, the unexpected appearance in a mirror or in a window. And that's been very helpful. But I have a long way to go, and I bet that's not unusual. Partly it's because I think of myself as one person. You're saying talk to your younger self. Well, that means putting my younger self a little bit away from me or seeing her separate from me, and that isn't something I really do. I feel as if I'm a sort of a timeless creature, that I'm all ages. It's only when I, you know, I look in the mirror and I think, oh, my goodness, I'm this age. But as a person who's going about her business, I don't feel as if I'm any age at all. And, but the one thing that has helped me more than anything in self-acceptance is to watch the self-deprecating, manipulative little practices I do with people, fishing for a compliment by insulting myself, or they're just tons of little things, and I think you don't need that from them. Yourself. Respect yourself. Respect feels like an adult word, a doable word. It doesn't have any mushiness in it. So starting with the idea of self-respect has been the way to go for me. And as for calling myself the way Cynthia, why can't
Sylvia
I remember
Borstein.
Her name?
Sylvia Borstein. Borstein,
yeah. Sylvia, where she says, Susan, sweetheart, well, good grief. Maybe that's something to really look forward to, but that seems like out of my range of acceptability there.
Well, that's exactly what Matt Kahn was talking about last night.
Yeah,
when
right.
It doesn't feel loving and genuine to say something genuinely loving to yourself, it's simply because that account is overdrawn. There, the negativity has been poured in for so long. And maybe, you know, it was part of the childhood family dynamic, but it is available to be changed, right? I can make positive deposits, and over time, there will be a positive balance, and that will resonate more strongly, and it will feel joyful or blissful to be loving, respectful, nurturing, supportive to my younger self.
Right. Right. I understand that. And you're right about the family dynamic. I was thinking it's our culture. We didn't use words like that. Those were mushy words. Those were words other people used. And if they were used in our presence, we were embarrassed and all kinds of not very pleasant feelings came up. Like we thought it was inappropriate even, not in any bad way, but it was just, oh, good grief, give me a break type of reaction. That's over the top. And yet I know, I remember with my dolls, I had these dolls, and I was so tender and demonstrative with them and spoke to them with all the words that we didn't use in my family. Even as a little kid, I would do that. It was like a correction, which tells me, that this is the right thing to be doing. So it's a wonderful topic. And go ahead.
With practice, you'll see it. If you practice it, you'll see a change in how it feels.
Yeah.
I just remembered the line from Tuesdays with Maury, where Maury says, listen, Mitch, if you live in a culture that doesn't leave you feeling good about yourself, you need to create your own culture. You were raised in a family that didn't leave you feeling good about yourself, you need to create your own family culture within your own inner dialogue that is more gentle, that is more respectful, that is more gooey, soft, whatever, that younger part of you that used to play with your dolls knew was nourishing and nurturing.
Yeah, right. Did. I know, it seems amazing, but I think built into us is a self-correcting navigational system that we can keep on righting the boat in order to be all right. And then when it all comes conscious, we can actually make choices, and that's what Matt Tan's talking about here and what you've been talking about and what Michael does. Yeah, I have a little testimonial along the lines of how effective this work has been. And I told Michael on the show yesterday toward the end, but 2 days ago I was caught in traffic and trying to get to school to pick up three boys to take them home. And I thought, I wonder how bad the traffic is here. I better open up my phone and key in the name of the school and see how long of a delay we have. Pick up my phone, start to type, and run right into the truck in front of me at 2 miles per hour. The truck is huge, and thank goodness it wasn't a little mini or something, because I did a huge amount of damage to my car. And the truck pulled over, and the guy was very nice. And he was so kind that I thought, this is Pradivan at work, because I've been doing the gentle art of blessing and it's already coming back to me. First of all, no kids were in the car. No dog was in the car. And I did a stupid thing, and this is the consequence, but it is probably the most gentle correction, expensive though, I have to tell you, that I could have gotten to remember, to be reminded not to pick up my phone when I'm driving. So the guy gets out and pulls over, he has me take pictures, and we exchange information, and we're still stuck in traffic, and it's at a standstill. Two girls beside me pull up, and they say, are you okay? And I said, I'm fine. I'm just disgusted that I was looking at my phone. Don't look at your phone when you're driving. You've heard that before. And they said, oh, I know. It happens to the best of us. Blessings on you, they said. Two of them, young girls. And I thought, oh, my God, this is so amazing. So, of course, course I was jangled, but I made it a point to focus, and the car was drivable. Went and got the boys. I showed them the damage. I looked around for leaking gas or anything. No problems. Headlights working. Kicker was working. So we got home. And that's the end of the story, except to say I didn't want to sock myself in the head, which is what I used to do when I was mad at myself for something. And it seems as if there's a lot of healing gone on, and it bore fruit right then in this little accident. And I think my car, by the way, is totaled. They opened it up, and the whole front frame is bent in, and they said they'll have to cut this off. It's going to be extremely expensive. And so anyway, there's the story. It's a testimonial, and it's also a warning to anybody who's listening to please don't even be tempted to pick up your phone, no matter how slowly things are moving. End of story.
Well, that's the kind of benefit that constant application of these tools over time can bring. And it's great to hear. Congratulations.
Thanks.
It's the effects that happen when we choose love and even choose loving thoughts about ourselves. Respectful, gentle, that's what happens. Everybody has these events happen in their life at one point or another. That can't be avoided, but we don't have to pour the venom and the vitriol on top of it that many of us have been taught to do as an internal dialogue.
Right. Well, I can start with respect and watch all the little ways, you know, of trying to shield myself from the imagined judgments of other people. That's what those things are. I'm imagining being found unacceptable, so I cut them off at the pass and acknowledge that I'm not acceptable, and I know it already. So you don't have to hit me. You don't say a word, a mean word or anything.
Where do you suppose that came from?
Oh, right.
Yeah, it came from your childhood. It came from being raised by a person who didn't feel good about herself.
Right.
You learned it from a master.
Yeah.
Right. You're a good student and a fast learner, and you've learned how to be abusive to yourself at the master's level.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stress in choosing to take my place, to take space, take my place, and tell myself I'm okay and you're okay. I know that's right out of transactional analysis, but I can't get over, I've never gotten over the brilliance of that little I'm okay, you're okay, I'm not okay, you're okay, you're not okay, I'm not okay, and how those correspond to the various horrible labels, diagnoses that we hitch, to clients. But this way, we're all healthy when we say those things. We just, it's just a way of watching, just a way of seeing things. But it does still seem unsafe to just take space, take place. I imagine even now I'm imagining I'm talking too much and there's somebody out there who really doesn't like this and they're triggered by what I'm saying, and that's none of my business, but those are thoughts that go through my head. So that Matt
well,
client,
and
what,
and you come by them honestly, right? You paid your dues to have those negative thoughts in you, and it's that your work, right? Every one of us that has these traumas that as they went in, we interpreted them negatively or interpreted ourselves negatively. Now we've got these thought patterns, these beliefs that we're holding. And
yes,
as we go in and find them, you know, discover them and the younger version of ourselves that holds on to them, that believes them, we can correct them. Every negative belief we have about ourselves is an error.
Yes.
It is
a misperception. Right. The work brings us there in the gentlest possible way, without confrontation, and allows the lesson, I think, to get in there and start doing the healing without having, like when Mako says, do a love exchange. That to me seems like an extreme request. Too much, too demanding, confrontational, unsafe. And I know that's all stuff, but still, with the other tools, it isn't necessary yet to do that. I'm putting that assignment a little distance away. It's still too unpleasant a thought. So I guess what I'm saying is there are so many tools that if we use the ones we can use, we'll get there. I'm hoping we'll get there anyway.
Well, it's fascinating that you say that from your perspective, a love exchange in the mirror with yourself seems, I forget what you said, harsh, drastic, whatever. That's so telling. Right? I mean, no one's asking you to cut off a finger.
I know.
Right? And yet your response to that loving gesture, that self-nurturing gesture, is that it's drastic.
Yeah.
So pay attention to that. And evaluate that, you know, imagine how you would respond to one of your grandsons who had that assessment, and then say those same things, those rationalizations, those gentle corrections, say them to yourself, and to begin to work with that backlog or history of negativity and harshness that you're holding inside your mind-body energy system, inside your memories of, you know, living in that family and being conditioned to think or speak in a certain way and not talk lovingly to others, not be openly affectionate to others, whatever that constellation of conclusions is that you were referring to earlier, and gently, without ridiculing yourself for having that as your starting point, meet yourself where you are and gently work with yourself to introduce another level of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
At least that was the recommendation from the talk last night. So in keeping with our agreement, someone else, area code 760, has put their hand up. Who do we have?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey, this is Anne. Hi, Susan.
Yay, Anne.
Hey, okay, so let's address a couple of things here that I heard. I know the thing about looking in the mirror sometimes is hard, and what I do, because I go, oh, gee, that's really, really ugly looking today, and I go back, and maybe it comes from teaching kindergarten, I go back and I start making weird faces. The weirdest faces, and just kind of, you know, and pretty soon I'm laughing, and I go, okay, that's when I put my hand on the mirror and my hand on my heart. Okay, now I can make that love exchange. Anyway, that's just one thing that I do that helps me.
Yeah.
And then your story about the accident, I came close, scared the bejeebies out of me the day I did that. I was grateful that I didn't touch the person's bumper in front of me. But, yeah, that was a wake-up call. what I heard you say, dear, is that it was a stupid choice and that you weren't stupid, and you used to say that about yourself. So I just wanted to congratulate you that you separated.
Oh, good. Thanks for that thought.
So
yes, well, yeah, I do
so
feel
awesome.
So much. Oh, thanks, Anne. Yeah, I do feel much sturdier taking my place on the planet than I used to be. And it's a wonderful, happy feeling, and life is so much better because of it.
Well, and like Dr. Tim, you say, it just takes a lot of practice. I still catch myself with the, I had discovered that when I said out loud, duh, when somebody, because of the attitude and the tone of it that I'm saying to myself, that negative self-talk I discovered. Well, when somebody else compliments or they point out something that I didn't see that I should have seen, and I go, duh. And I go, but I was doing that a lot. So it takes a lot of practice. So every once in a while it'll pop up, and then I'll say, well, that was stupid. Oh, wait, cancel that. Oh, wow, that was really great that I got to see that. And I just changed the words. It's like you were saying, Dr. Tim, just changing those words that were negative to something positive right then, because if I don't practice it right then it'll come up again and I'll repeat the negative. But so anyways, I'm still working on the duh, but it's far and few between now. So it's like, okay, that's how we gauge our progress. I think you've talked about that, Dr. Tim, and so has Michael. You know, when it doesn't happen as often, and you hear yourself, you know, saying some positive words versus the negative. And so anyway,
mm-hmm.
encouraging. So I applaud you, dear. And I applaud myself
thanks.
As I'm saying that. And then when you said, you know, you don't know what it might trigger in people. Well, it might trigger positive things like it did for me today. So, you know, it's like you said. And Dr. Tim and Michael encourage us all the time, right? It's all about us that they're talking to, and it's about the time that they're taking with us at that moment. And it doesn't matter the people that are listening, because they'll have their own work to do. So anyway, that's it.
I know,
I'm complete.
That's true. Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, I'm glad you called. I miss our meetings. I know we're going to have two coming up, but I miss seeing all your mugs in the frames in the Zoom.
Yeah, right? Anyway, thanks, Dr. Tim, because I appreciate, you know, how you plug
great
us in.
Great topic, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the call. It's wonderful input, and always good to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you. Blessings.
All right, blessings. So we have 7 minutes left. Susan, you want to sing us a song, play us a tune on the piano, bring up another topic? Well, it's a pleasure.
Well, I can't think of a topic, although I had a wonderful talk with grandson Charlie this morning. He doesn't need to be at school until afternoon, and I'll be taking him on that same highway in Tim Bingham's car. Taking a breath on that one. But he has been struggling with OCD, and Michael gave him a wonderful mind shifter, me to give him a wonderful mind shifter. And he called, and I said, how are you? And he said, I saw Dr. Salas yesterday, who is his therapist, and he respects and likes this therapist very much. And he gave Charlie a tool that was different than the mind shifter, and he said he's going to do it. He really thinks he can do it. So the mind shifter, I had sent it to him in an email. He has it, but he's using a tool. The tool is simply that when Charlie thinks something might be worthy of being worried about, the doctor said, well, ask yourself, is this like if you're driving and one tire is almost flat? Is that something to be concerned about? And Charlie said, yeah, that is. And the doctor said, exactly. And he said, but if you have these thoughts about this teacher who smiles at you more than he smiles at other students, and you're fearing he's trying to be nice to you because he learned that he had scared you or hurt your feelings months and months, years, 2 years ago now, and it's been going on forever. Can you say to yourself, is this something that I should be worried about? And Charlie was able to make the distinction between the tire and the other guy, and he told me he hadn't been able to make that distinction before. Now, I don't know enough about OCD to know, but it sounded as if the boy is on a healing path, that he's actually making distinctions between his healthy thinking and his not-so-healthy thinking. And I'm very excited about it. Maybe we'll talk more in the car. But he said he would save the mind shifter if the other one stopped working well, but he's excited about this tool that his doctor gave him. So that's the thing at the moment. It's very simple, but it's good.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
Whatever helps.
No kidding. Yeah. So, but no one,
yes,
I don't. What?
I said, yes, indeed. And you were saying,
yeah.
No, you don't have another topic?
Yeah, I don't have another topic. It doesn't take much to find one when you start doing your talk. Oh, that's my son's dog. She's here for the day. She's so busy. I'm sorry.
Another country heard from would be the comment my grandmother would say. So, well, are you complete for the call?
I am, thanks.
All right. Well, I appreciate your calls as always, and congratulations on the progress you're making, and I'm sure I'm joined by everyone on the call to send loving thoughts and energies to you and your grandson. Hopefully that tool will continue to work well for him, and I'll look forward to the next time we get to chat.
Thanks, Dr. Tim. Me
All
too.
Right. Blessings.
Thanks.
And I will remind us all that we're going into a weekend. We have, as usual, two groups next week, Tuesday and Thursday. Information about that is on mindshiftersacademy.org. Separate information for Tuesday and Thursday. And you're encouraged to, especially if you're listening to this on the archives, send us your comments or questions to Jeannie at Jeannie at yagain.org. Or you can send an email to me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I was just trying to get my headset plugged in. Appreciate you.
Well, I saw you had your microphone turned on, so I thought it was safe to let it rip. So
That's
have a wonderful show and a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. We'll talk to you later. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, June the 4th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. I'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in to India this morning, and we're really close. Hopefully over the weekend we'll get it all finished, and by Monday morning we will have working apps. And after that gets going, and I'm just about finished with some of the broken links on the website, so that's going and just moving right along. So we appreciate your holding us in the space and support, and hopefully all these things will be just trucking along at high speed come Monday. We don't have the baby today, so I've spent a big part of the day doing computer stuff, and as I did yesterday. And let's see where Michael is. I invite you to go to the website. It's still www.whyagain.org, and it's just a whole new look, but it is the same link. And you can still go to the Start Here button or the Bullseye or any of those. They're still on there. It just looks a little bit different. And I appreciate your comments. You can write me at jeannie@whyagain.org and let me know if you find something that needs to be fixed or give me your opinion. Always appreciate that. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation in this crazy world as it moves forward with its exacerbating conflicts and insanity. It definitely is a wonderful stimulus to give each person an opportunity to clean up the mind of conflict in them. And of course, the mind of conflict has always got somebody else to blame. It does its behavior, but somebody else is the problem. And there the vicious minds, the attacking minds go on with their attacks and talk about how, well, you know, it's all your fault that I'm doing it. So what's the matter with you? And we find that the mind of, you know, carbon-based memory, you go back to Yeshua and he talks about carbon-based memory. He talks about his father who was from above, and then he talks about your father who's from below. And he says, your father is a liar. There is no truth in him. He uses the language of lies and words. Words are keys. We're working on responsibility communication and just lots of things opening up in that regard. And Yeshua just, you know, in essence, told people, if you're coming from carbon-based memory, you're coming from the past, your mind's telling you a lie, the indicator that it'll be there will be your behavior, and your words will be based in hostility and fear. And, of course, he brought us a tool. Few choose to use the tool, few are interested, because what they're interested in is satisfying their father, which is, as Yeshua said, is a liar. The mind bringing up from carbon-based memory information from the past and pretending it is present in the moment is obviously a lie. I mean, it's so simple and so straightforward. And yet, if one trusts that liar, then they believe that the hostility and fear that their mind is projecting onto someone else, with the greatest or the slightest reasons, is all somebody else's fault. And, you know, it's over the centuries has destroyed millions and millions and millions of people. And if you look at the rhetoric that's going on today, we may be in for another round of insanity. So time for a wake-up call. Time to recognize that if our mind is guiding us out of energies that are off the mark, again, how do you tell your energy is off the mark? You're speaking out of hostility or fear. Whenever you do that, the mind is not sane. It's working out of a condition that the human mind was not meant to work out of. And when we wake up, begin to move into a mind that's connected to love, a mind that's connected to truth, then we begin to live in a different world, literally a different world. Literally, the constructs of our mind are based in love rather than hostility or fear. And again, the way you tell is there an energy off the mark involved in your speaking. Then stop speaking about everybody else and wake up. It's time for us to realize who we are. And that life is about living as the active presence of love, as we were designed to live. And when we do that, everything changes. So welcome to the conversation. Delighted that you're here. And let's look at our reading for today. We are on For those who are following along with us on page 77, the chapter Off the Mark in Why Is This Happening to Me Again. Again, you can usually order used copies. The book is out of print, but you can order copies from Amazon or eBay very inexpensively. And you can also go to our website, whyagain.org. You can download the book for free. And we just finished yesterday's show with the meeting from yesterday's show with a key thought from the bottom of page 76. The vessel in which negativity is stored always suffers more damage than the object upon which negativity is poured. So if you're languishing out of hostility or fear, you're suffering. And the reason you're suffering is because you're engaging energy that doesn't belong in your system. You're not suffering because of what somebody else does. You're suffering because your denial system is so powerful you can hide the damage you're doing from yourself until you've got somebody to project it on. Then you can pretend it's all somebody else's fault. So we're talking with Richard about this idea of the word sin in Aramaic meaning off the mark. And I offered him the thought the world didn't get the message. The way fear is promoted in the media and in the world is almost like worship. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we tune in to an information system that gives us the details from anywhere on the planet of the most terrible acts of humanity. It could be construed that fear has been purposely used to keep people in confusion, fear, and overwhelm, perhaps in order to control them. And I often invite people to go sit in front of your TV, you know, give yourself an hour or two when you've got a little bit of space. Take a piece of paper. Draw a line about an inch wide down one side of the page, and then use the other part of the page for this second part of the experiment. And the experiment is sit in front of the TV and spend no more than 2 or 3 minutes on any channel, any given channel. So start out wherever the TV comes on. Sit there for 2 or 3 minutes, and every time you hear a word that's based in hostility or fear, put a check mark on the right-hand side of the line. Every time you hear a word that's actually based in and reflective of love, put a check mark on the left side of the page. 2-3 minutes on each channel and just sit there for an hour. Flip, 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 station to station. And mark hostility and fear words, check mark on the right side. Words based in love, check mark on the left. Guess what? It's interesting. People use that device to babysit their children. I'm appalled when I listen to, you know, our Irene likes to watch cartoons, of course, a little kid. But I'm absolutely appalled at some of the messages. There's one in particular, these cute little cartoon characters, and kids in the cabinet eating sugar. And the cartoon father comes in and says, "Oh, Johnny, whatever your name is, are you eating sugar?" And he's standing there with a bowl in his hand and a spoon in his mouth. And he puts the bowl behind his back and says, "No, Father, no." And the whole thing goes through. I mean, they're just modeling for kids. Why? And it's just like it's mind-boggling that this is a kid's cartoon on a kid's station teaching children to lie. I mean, it's just so silly. It goes through this person, you know, the little boy, the little girl, the father, you know, in the sugar. The kids come in, "Oh, got you. Are you in sugar?" No. What have we had modeled for us? And actually, in that passage I referred to earlier, when Yeshua talks about your father is the father of liars, one source of information comes from above, being, the mind of being, which in Aramaic was called the mind of Christ. The other comes from carbon-based memory, the past, below. And he says, you watched your father do this. That's how you learned it. It's the power person dynamic. And we've been taught that our safety, so often our safety lies in hostility and fear, and that's the God we turn to. It's just watch the average person is stressed especially, and even the person who talks about their love of God and their churchianity and all of that. But when their mind is stressed, they turn to their real God. And it's the language of hostility or fear, what they watch their power person do. And so this work is about cleaning that up, being done with it. Richard was engrossed in his thoughts. He says, it's almost like I've kept myself in prison by living in ignorance of this and allowing myself to be indoctrinated by fear and manipulation. It's a pretty sobering thought to realize I've been a manipulator and have purposely used that tactic by inspiring fear in people with whom I live. From what I've been taught, it seemed like a normal way to act. You know, what the world considers normal, this hostility and fear dialogue, is how people defend themselves and protect the source of their thinking, protect their hostility and fear-based mind. And I'm going to offer you that the language of hostility and fear, the blame game, the turning it all around to make it all somebody else's fault, is a terrible way to live. It's a self-destructive way to live. It seems like it creates survival, because if somebody's coming and resonate brain cells in me of attack, then I project that they're attacking. Then if I attack and I defend myself and I seem to survive, well, gee, look at that. I survived. But that's the survival mind. And the survival mind, while it keeps somebody alive for a short period of time, is the mind that leads to death. When you move out of that survival mind into a mind connected to love, then you start to step into truly thriving rather than surviving. Survival mind kills people early in their lives. The thriving mind is the key to true longevity. And so if you find yourself functioning out of hostility or fear, stop the conversation that blames somebody else, that tries to turn it all around. I mean, one of the absolute expert things of the non-being mind is, you just watch how I can obfuscate here and confuse this conversation so much that hostility and fear will be the only answer. And then, of course, it'll be your fault. It's how we destroy ourselves. Just pay attention to how you feel after you do that. Death is normal to those who live in survival. It's called the sympathetic dominant state. Circulation is shut down for survival purposes, and hostility and fear run throughout the whole system. And we're just not designed for that. So the invitation is to once again begin, step into the presence of the mind of love in you, apply forgiveness to the hostility and fear, and come back to your human life. Well, here's support, what we're here to do. And the thoughts of the generation don't cut it. Generations and generations and generations of all kinds of crazy antics are what most people live out of. And so we're here to stand in the willingness to move back to love. So we're honored and delighted that you're here to have this conversation with us today, to bring your applied knowledge, to bring your insight, to bring your questions to the table so that individually and collectively we can each build the brain cells for living differently than the generations have done. So welcome to the conversation. I'm delighted that you're here. Machine, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's quiet on both fronts.
Well, if you're out there in listener land, our calling number is 563-999-3581. Push one. Yeah, I put you in queue to have a conversation, and we'd love to hear from you. So if you're listening to one of the stations where we can't hear you, where we can't see you in our control panel, if you dial into that number, 563-999-3581, we will be able to have a conversation. If you're out there in listener land, how can we support you? What's on your mind? Not everybody at once, though.
We have a hand up.
Oh, great. Let's say hello.
314, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hey, Michael and Jeannie, Doug here.
Hey there, good sir. Welcome.
Good morning. Or afternoon, rather. I guess
yes.
Even more afternoon for you, isn't it?
So how do you be?
Okay, at the moment. I just wanted to just kind of go more into that. I just think it's such a powerful statement that you made. I've heard you make it a few times now about how the survival mind can keep you alive for a short time, but kills you, and
yeah.
The mind of love keeps you alive. I just think that that's just so intriguing, and I guess I kind of want to dive into it a little more. It seems like it's clearly true and sort of like an embodiment of the phrase, that sin leads to death and so on. It's like being anywhere other than, the mind of God would. But I'd be interested in anything else you'd want to say about that, how it is that the survival mind is just the mind of the past, right?
Correct. Go ahead.
Go ahead. You go ahead. Yes, you were starting.
Well, I was going to say that when you realize that perception is a construct, the world has taught us that we have a set of windows called eyes, and we look out through our windows and we see the world. Well, any kind of applied intelligence there tells you that's obviously a lie. The TV antenna receives a signal, feeds into the TV, and you see the picture in the TV. But the TV's not looking out through the antenna at some program that's hanging here in the sky and watching it. There's a signal that comes in. The TV decodes the signal and reflects it as picture and sound. Our eye is a one-way device. It is not a window. It is not a two-way device. You can't see out of it. Information comes in, light energy comes in, and according to that, what that light energy resonates in us, one person stands connected to love, and an argument starts, and the person who's connected to love, the mind of love, rather than the mind of hostility or fear, takes a breath and says, we could resolve this conflict and move somewhere else. That's what the mind of love would do. The mind of hostility or fear is like, yeah, let's get them. Let's get into that fight and argument. Because one's perceptual construct comes from below, carbon-based memory, hostility and fear world, which most people live in. The other mind comes, as Yeshua said in that particular passage, it's in John 8, and he talks about, my mind comes from above. And
right.
And that's where he goes on to say, and your mind comes from below, and it's a liar. It's the father of liars. There is no truth in it. And so when you realize that anything from the past stored in carbon-based memory that is resonated into activity and pretends it is a present moment event has to be a lie. So obviously if we're either living in truth or living in a lie, if we're living in a mind connected to love, we're living in a mind connected to hostility or fear, we're either going to get really good, high quality, accurate guidance, or we're going to get some pretty poor advice. One mind's going to give us some poor advice, and one mind's going to give us some very powerful and empowering advice. So obviously survival's going to be better, and thriving is going to happen if I've got high level, good quality perception. If I've got low quality, hostility and fear-based perception, the advice coming from my mind is probably not going to be very good, and I'm probably not going to survive very long, and I'm certainly not going to thrive. You know, that's one perspective on it. The other perspective is just energetically. And when you realize that this body-mind unit is an energy system, you know, if we listen to Einstein, he talks about how, in regard to matter, he says, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibration has been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses, there is no matter. So he's saying we don't live in a material world. The world of pictures is the world generated out of carbon-based memory content, and it looks like we're looking through our eyes at it, but we're obviously not. So what is happening? Something from the past, by a current moment event, is resonated into activity, and that something produces a perceptual guidance system, a reality based in the past, obviously has to be false for the present moment. It might resemble what happened yesterday, but it's not what's going on now. It's not what's going on today. So one set of energies relative to the human system is hostility and fear. And, you know, if we go back to recognizing that human life is the created essence of love, then hostility or fear is not. And if hostility and fear is what's moving in a device that's designed for love, it's obviously going to be a toxic energy. It's not going to keep it in very good shape. And so both from the energetic perspective and from the guidance that we get, we're either going to live or we're going to destroy ourselves. And so, you know, to me, it's a pretty simple, straightforward thing. The problem is that generationally, we've had so many generations of ancestors, and all you have to do is look at how did mom and dad do it? You know, were their words primarily based in love? Were their experiences, were their expression, was your expression with mom and dad, you were just able to be totally safe and secure and receptive to the presence of love always because you were just supported. That's the way it is. How it's designed to be. If that wasn't where one's life was lived, then probably it was hostility and fear, have to be on guard, always a lot of sadness, always a lot of pain, always a lot of blame, and you're usually the one by the power person who's being blamed for the content or the condition of their minds. You know, look what you've done to me. And so one who lives with all that modeling is going to tend, when they're not under stress, you know, we were talking about the power person dynamic yesterday. When not under stress, it's easy to step into, oh, I love you. This is wonderful. Aren't we having fun? But the minute that stress goes up, which means a goal has been violated, one who is living connected to the mind of love, higher guidance, is getting all kinds of wonderful input and guidance, and things are rocking and going well. But the minute that somebody in the environment or oneself violates a goal that's held, then that goal causes stress to go up. And the shift takes place from the mind connected to love to the mind connected to hostility and fear. And now somebody's languaging hostile and fear, you know, in 1 second, say, oh, yes, I love you, which, of course, is a fraud in itself because love is a state of being. It's not what we do to each other. But let's say accurately, I'm here living as the presence of love, but I have some old hostilities and fears in carbon-based memory. And if you don't fulfill a goal I have for you, you know, whatever the goal is, it can be the simplest, subtlest thing. then the survival mind comes in, the lower brain comes in, and up comes that survival mode. And along with that survival mode, the advice that comes is, I need to attack you, for most people, or I need to protect myself from you, or I need to run away, or I need to convince you that you're the problem in my life. And you know, so up comes a hostility and fear-based world. And in that state, everything contracts in physiology. In particular, you know, there are microcirculatory vessels that are one-tenth the width of a hair or less. There are about 60 billion of them in each human form. And each of those vessels are controlled by a set of muscles at the head of the capillary. And when one goes into an uptight situation, what does that mean? It means that those muscles have contracted. They're tight. And when they're tight, they close down the flow of blood into the capillary. And the only way that oxygen nutrition gets delivered to a cell and waste get removed from a cell is when those muscles are open and blood is flowing. And so physiologically, hostility and fear is a dangerous place to live. It shortens life. Although, again, you know, if a saber-toothed tiger is coming and I need to run from the saber-toothed tiger, it might make my life longer to be in that state because my muscles are tense and taut and I'm ready to rock and run. But, and that's a good thing. That's a survival mechanism, and it's there. But if I live in the city where, oh, God, there's so many dangers and insanities and, you know, poverty and suffering and pain, and one lives in that sympathetic dominant state continuously, you know, the cells don't last very long if they're not getting blood flow, if they're not getting oxygen nutrition. And if the waste products of metabolism in the cell, which are all pretty much acidic, are left in the cell and not properly removed, then we got somebody that's in a lot of trouble.
Very good. Yes.
So okay, from every perspective, to me, that just is becoming clearer and clearer.
Yeah, and that's great because it also is helpful that you added in that part about how it can be beneficial in the short term, running away from the saber-toothed tiger.
Yeah,
but
if there's no saber-toothed tiger there and I'm running continuously,
right?
Then we've got difficulty.
All right. Well, I think that feels like a useful expansion of that for me and a deepening and probably that's what I needed to ask. So thank you, Michael.
Well, I suspect that it probably fits perfectly with some of the work that you do in the what you've identified as higher brain learning, lower brain learning. It's probably just exactly in alignment, I would suspect. I don't know a lot about it, but I would suspect it fits perfectly.
No, it is. It certainly is. You know, as I think I heard, I think it was Dr. Tim saying recently how so many, all these different systems of healing, they have certain common roots, you know, certain common ideas. And I just recognize that I hear a concept particularly expressed in a particular way from you from time to time, and I hear it, and it feels really concise and powerful and like it's just the tip of an iceberg of a huge file I'd like to create and understand, you know, and that's what you're saying. I think how you said it was something like a survival mind will keep you alive for a short time, but will kill you in the long run. Or,
right.
You know, and that's just so, whereas the mind of love will bring you into thriving and living. And that's, it's like to really, really understand that because I think we've been so conditioned into thinking, oh, you know, if I'm not hostile and fearful, I will die. You know, that the world's going to get me and I've got to be in that condition to defend myself. And that's the state of mind I need to be in to figure out, quote, figure out how to manage my life appropriately.
It's an exact reversal.
And all of that is untrue, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at John 8:34 right now, a couple of passages, let me share them. is Yeshua. You know, our comment, the thing we've been talking about in this chapter of the book is sin. And that in Aramaic, the word simply means energy that's off the mark. And anything that comes from, as he said, I said earlier, he says, from below is off the mark. So here's what he's saying to the group of Pharisees that have gathered. Verily, verily, I say to you that whoever committeth sin, that is, engages in energy of hostility or fear that's off the mark, is the servant of sin. And the servant abideth not in the Father's house forever. So we're going to either live in energies that are off the mark, or we're going to live connected to love. And he says, Son, he says, I'm in this other mind, you're in the lower mind, I'm living out of the higher mind. He says, but the Son abideth there forever. If that Son therefore shall make you free, in other words, if you've got my tools, what I'm really telling you, if you understand, if you've got the brain cells for what I'm saying, and believe me, the theologians will take you in 1,000 different directions that the people who don't want to do their work aren't going to say, here, let me show you what this guy meant about doing your inner work. He says, if that Son therefore shall make you free, you shall be free indeed. And he goes on to say, I know that, you know, he's talking to the Pharisees who proclaim Abraham. He says, I know that you are Abraham's seed, but you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. So his words based in love, there's no room in this mind of hostility and fear, this survival mind. He says, I speak that which I've seen with my Father, which is love, and you do that which you've seen with your Father. Samson said, but Abraham is our seed. He says, if you're Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. What did Abraham do? You know, you look at all the conflicts that Abraham guided the world through, and what did he do? He ended conflict after conflict. He stopped wars. I mean, it's amazing. There's this wonderful movie, if you haven't seen it, called Abraham. In fact, I just realized I should watch it again. He says, if you were Abraham's children, you'd be doing his work. But now you want to kill me. A man who's told you the truth which I heard directly from love, this Abraham did not do. You do the works of your father. And they said to him, but we are not born of fornication. We have one Father, which is God. And Yeshua says to them, if God were your Father, you would be loved. You would love me, for I proceed forth and come from love. Neither I came of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my thought? They have no brain cells. He says, why do you not understand my thought? Because you cannot hear my word. Your mind has been so filled with hostility or fear. The truth has no place in you. And you watch somebody whose response is always hostility and fear and blame. There's no room for truth because that's not what they have brain cells for. And the work that needs to be taken is insane. I mean, it's a huge amount of work. He goes on to say, and remember that Satan in Aramaic means the resister, one who misleads. He says, you are of your father, the devil, the resister, the one who misleads, and the lusts of your father you will do. In other words, your hostility and fear-based mind wanted somebody to blame, somebody to fight with, struggle, survive. And he says, so you'll do the lust, that which your father wanted to do. And then he talks about how it causes death. He says, he has been a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, then he's he of his own, for he is a liar and the father of liars. But because I tell you the truth, you don't want to hear it. You believe me not. He goes on to say, well, which of you can say you saw me commit sin? Which of you can say you saw me did something off the mark? He goes on and he says, if I say the truth, why do you not believe me? He that is of love hears love's words. You therefore hear them not because you are not of love. And there's the mind of hostility or fear. That always has to have a conversation about somebody else. That always has to put the problem, their blame, you know, somebody else is the problem. Here, no, we don't want to talk about me. Let me talk about the real problem in my life. It's that person over there. It's my boss. It's my neighbor. It's my spouse. It's my parent. It's all somebody else's fault. And, you know, the whole conversation is just so clear when you've got the brain cells for it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah.
And then he goes on. Such a powerful statement. Verily I say to you, if a man keep my word, what was his word? When he said, what was the first thing you have to do? You have to function as love. He shall never see death. And yet, what do most people do when they're under stress? They have no interest in a conversation about love. They want to find somebody to blame and prove that it's all their fault. If a man keeps my word, he shall never taste of death. And, you know, and when he's talking about his words, he's not talking about his ego self, which so much of churchianity has chased down. If I honor myself, my honoring is nothing. But what does most of churchianity do? They don't want to honor his words, talk about what he said. In fact, when he tells them what they need to do, they say too hard a saying and leave. And then they go out and create a theology that says, well, there's nothing you can do. You just have to believe, and then you'll be free of your insanity, which, you know, is pretty bizarre thoughts. So he's talking about, you know, love, the Father, the Creator. He said, but you've not known him. I've known him. And if you should say, I know him not, I should be a liar like you, but I know him. Keep his word. I mean, it's just such a powerful passage to realize that when we've got the brain cells that he's talking about, not external things, he's leading people back to the source of their thinking, which is what he calls the Father. And, you know, you look at those who want to create this exclusive club, and Yeshua talks about our common Father, our Father, but those who are in the club are like, no, he's the special, only begotten, and he's the only one that can get in the club, and you can never get there, and the rest of the conversation degrades from there.
Indeed.
Mm. It's a good read, John 8. Reading it with the brain cells of the work as opposed to, you know, talk about devils. And I have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. You look at that other passage, goes back and, you know, what does Jesus say? You who having ears don't hear. Is your dedication, no matter what this person in front of you is doing, fulfilling or breaking all the goals you have for them, is your Father, is a source of your thinking, love or hostility and fear? And forgiveness means you have to give up the whole other conversation. The one that's about what they did and how they're wrong. If only they would do the right thing. If only they'd fulfill all my goals, then I could be happy. No, if only you would connect to the power of love, then you'd be happy. And each person who's willing to do that, well, it's a key to the proper power supply for the human cell, which means now we have thrival instead of survival. And it's like, to me, it's kind of like what's getting clear to me is that we've got the developmental phase that's happened. It's gotten, you know, millions of people to being, quote unquote, what appears to be alive. And now it's time to start to listen to the higher mind, the higher guidance, and follow that, really, truly have honor for that conversation rather than getting lost in the conversation based in hostility and fear, blame and lies. Definitely takes some work.
Indeed, it does. Yeah. Thank you. That's great. So, yeah, I someone else call in now if Did you have someone else? Cool. Otherwise, I could. Yeah, okay. So take care.
If you've got another thought, hey, we're with you. If you've got another thought, that's what we're here for. So go for it.
No, I think I'm good for now. Thank you, Michael.
Cool.
Appreciate it.
Sweet. All right. Appreciate you. Have a blessed one.
Sure. Mm-hmm. You too.
All right. So it looks like we've got about 18 or so minutes left. Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see, 563-999-3581. You call that number, you're listening to the show, push 1, and we'll have a conversation. And I'd like to have a conversation with you. What's on your mind? Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet.
Well, who's out there that's thinking to themselves, I could push 1 and ask my question? Then here we are. This is the time to do it. How can we support you? What's on your mind in regard to these tools? And we're hearing the keyboard in the background. Really loud.
Oh, sorry.
Well, maybe we don't have any questions today or any other questions today. We do have about 20 minutes. I'd love
we
to.
We had a hand go up.
Oh, great. Let's say hello.
805, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Yeah, this is George.
Well, hey there, young man. Good to hear your voice.
To be able to, you know, get on, and as always, Julie's a big help. I had problems navigating on the computer, so she sent me the link by telephone, which I'm real grateful for. But what I got really aware of yesterday is that with all these health issues going on and other issues in my personal life, it was brought to my attention that I'm letting all the things go that raises my energy, and I'm doing all the things that I should not be doing. I started watching the news again, and I'm not, you know, I do A Course of Love and some other things online. I've not done that. I've postponed the worksheets, and now that I'm ready, I don't even have ink in the printer, so it's like I kind of sabotage myself in a way. But
ouch.
What I realized, but I'm really aware of it now. And, you know, I'm just making a real effort to turn things around because I know that's what I need to do to heal, because I'm trying to heal, but all my energy's going to all these other things. Oh, you know, it's getting used up by negativity, and I still have the faith, but we have a saying in AA, faith without works is dead. And that's kind of like, where I feel a little bit right now. Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you, and, you know, because every time I share, it's more of a commitment for me. You know, turn it around, and I want to turn.
It's definitely the way to build the brain cells.
Yeah.
Let me check and see if I understood your early comment. Some of the links that I've sent to you, because they've come in by text on your phone, you're not able to open on your computer. You're having trouble with them.
I have sometimes 2 doctor appointments and a nurse in one day. Every day, it's something. Either a nurse or a physical therapy or you know, I have to have a phone appointment. And then I have dialysis. I got to get ready at 3, and that's the rest of the day. So I just, it's hard because I guess I fell into a place where I want to and I'm trying, but it's like I was paddling as fast as I could, but not getting any place. Now I realize that, but I'm not sure if I should just go back to, you know, try to reclaim some of the stuff I was doing that made me feel good, or if I, you know, if there's something else I could be doing.
Well, my input would be, you know, just take every tool you've got and make the space to apply it. And,
uh-huh.
You know, as questions come up, we're here to support.
Yeah, I know that.
My thought is with your printer being a problem, you might, maybe there's a Kinko's or a FedEx copy shop or something like that nearby. You can just grab the file and email it to them. I know that Office Depot, if you call your local Office Depot store, they'll give you an email address to send the file to. So you can just grab the worksheet offline, send it, and they'll print it and pick it up in an hour.
All I got to do is go get ink, but I guess I've been sabotaging myself that way too, and I don't feel like I've been beating myself up, but I'm not doing what I need to be doing. That's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And
we found that Amazon has a generic ink that we buy that works really well, and it's about a tenth the price of what the local office supply store is. So you might just order it on Amazon. Look at your printer. And look
That's
at the reviews
fact.
On the.
I did order day before yesterday. I mean, but I'm just. I just need to be more aggressive in my recovery, and less with the negativity, the arguing, the fights, the problems with, you know, the other half.
Well, you know, what I've found is that the other half isn't the factor. It's yourself. If you choose to enter into a fight, that's your issue. And if you choose to refrain from that and cultivate your relationship with love and stay connected with love, then that's your prerogative.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps rather than thinking, you know, languishing about how something or somebody out there is doing it to you, just start to realize that if you're doing it, it's because you're doing it. And, you know, I don't know if you were on the show yesterday by chance, but it was a wonderful testimonial by Susan who, you know, acknowledged, you know, she created through her own action a car accident. And she, were you listening yesterday when she was talking?
No, I've everything go except that one Sunday morning ACOA meeting and one NA meeting like every other week. Something always comes up. And I see now I'm just using that as an excuse. But at the time it seems so real.
Yep. Well, and that's the truth. And it is. It's a reality that's very compelling when there's a lot of emotional energy behind it or avoidance or, you know, whatever the dynamics are. But what Susan was saying yesterday was that, she said, you know, when I was younger, she said, I would actually knock my head. I would physically knock my head on a window or a wall because of what I did. And she realized that through her own carelessness, she created an accident. And she was able to stop and just go, oh, look what I've done, and be gentle and loving and caring with herself. And so maybe it's time for George to begin to be more gentle and loving and caring with himself. Because
yeah,
I know that energy that promotes healing is the energy of staying connected to love. The energy that reinforces and creates disease is the energy of hostility or fear. And the power of choice is yours. Although the mind, remember, the mind of carbon-based memory makes decisions. There's no choice in the mind. You know, if you've got certain brain cells for something and I provide a stimulus to fire those brain cells are going to fire and they're going to tend to cause your mind to lean in the direction of a certain decision. Mm-hmm. And when you do the work of forgiving, weakening those things that seem to force you into a certain decision mode, and you strengthen the ability and cultivate your relationship with love, then you strengthen the presence of love in you, and that mind starts to take over. There are two minds there. You know, in the ancient languages, they talked about the mind of the body, adamos, the red clay, and they talked about the mind of what was called the mind of Christ. And there's nothing mystical or religious about that. It's just the mind of love in you is there, and the mind of hostility and fear is there. Which one are you going to listen to? So I'm here to support you, cultivating your ability to listen to the mind of love in you. And really make that the energy that fuels your physiology.
I know you are, and you've done that for me more than many times now, and I really appreciate that.
Well, we're here to continue the support, sir.
Well, I plan to, as soon as the ink comes, and I did order it yesterday, as soon as the ink comes, I have one worksheet I haven't written on, and that's my next step.
Cool.
I've not tried on the computer because the computer is a nightmare for me. Just, you know, anything at this point, because last time I was in the hospital, I don't know what I did, but everything crashed. My computer, my telephone. It took me a month to get to get it back.
Ouch.
So. Yeah, and that was hard. So now I'm just going to wait a couple more days, and then I know Julie will help me once I get started, or we'll do some together, and that makes a big difference. To me, it does.
Right.
So, yeah.
So
thank
do you have
Michael.
Access to your computer now?
Yeah. I do,
okay.
But I tried to find the link to go as the meeting. It had already started by, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes, and ever since then, I kept trying until like 10:34, and then I got the link from Julie by phone. So to her, I'll try to get somebody to help me get the link so I can use it more readily on the computer.
Okay. Well, I am in the process as we speak. And your email address is the Hotmail address that I've got?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just sending you a copy of the worksheet, a link to it.
Okay.
So you've got that if you need it. And I'll
maybe
include in
it
the phone number
is
for the radio show.
I'm sorry. I was talking. What was that, Michael?
I'll send you a link, the phone number for the radio show, so you've got that handy.
Okay. And can you send me a link over the computer so I can go on by computer?
Yep, that's what I'm doing as we speak.
Wow. Thank you so much.
In fact, I'll put a whole series of links in for different some different things that will help you, I think. So it'll be supportive. You just go through and click those links and start watching.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I appreciate it. I can't put it into words because it was a real crossroads in my life. Everything changed all at once.
Yeah. Well, I just sent you an email with a link to go to download the worksheet or print it. And the radio show number is right there in the title. And then I sent you an article I'm working on forgiveness. And there are, I don't know, a dozen or more links in that. And, of course, remember that the app is there. If you and there's a new piece in the app. You need to just set it up so that there's a new section.
That has not been uploaded yet.
Oh, that's right.
Yet.
Still not activated. Right. Okay. I keep moving a piece of information. Do we have any idea when it's going to be?
We're hoping to have both of them done over the weekend, so they should be active by Monday, but we'll see how it happens.
Oh, sweet. Cool.
Well, we'll do it, Michael.
All right, sir. Well, know that we're holding you in a blessing. And any other thoughts? Anything else we can support you with?
I just want to thank Jeannie, too, because she's definitely, you know, been a big help. So thank you, Jeannie.
Well, thank you for saying thank you, and you're welcome and deserving.
Great. Okay. I'm going to get off now. How do I get
all right,
off
sir,
on the telephone?
The disconnect button?
Okay. To end the phone call?
Yeah.
I can mute you from this end, George, and you can keep listening.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're just down to the last, minute or two as well. So.
Thank you. Bye now. Have a great.
All right. Blessings and love. Tell Michaela we send our love too. All right. We're down right to the last minute or so. So everybody, we appreciate your listening ears, and if there's anything in particular that's been meaningful for you, when this show is complete, you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can click on the microphone, and that microphone will take you to a download of, 10 years of archives, thousands of shows. Go catch yourself another copy and give it a listen. Pass it on to somebody who might be interested, and create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.